In recent years, it has become more and more common to see members of law enforcement wearing body cameras when deployed in the field in New York, with even the state police starting to utilize the technology for its troopers this year. But criminal justice advocates on the left argue that there is a gap of accountability in the law enforcement community and want to plug that hole by requiring officers in the state's prison system to wear body cameras too. And to make the case for this policy, we're joined by Rob DeLeon, the senior vice president at the Fortune Society, which promotes alternatives to incarceration and successful reentry following incarceration. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hey, David. Thank you for having me.
So how are body cameras currently used, if at all, by the state's Department of Corrections and Community Supervision? And how would you like to see them used in the future?
Cameras in general have made society a lot more transparent, good and bad, right? George Floyd is the unfortunate catalyst, I think, for the current hyper-awareness on the part of society at large. You know, to the fact that black and brown men and women in this country face far more discrimination at the hands of law enforcement than others. So we think it's really important that where cameras can be utilized to shine a brighter light on the interactions between law enforcement and incarcerated people in this case, we absolutely have to push for that implementation. There was a pilot in New York State in 2019, about 2 years ago. There was a pilot that is no longer up and running, and it was at a limited amount of facilities. And what we think is that it's really important that we have body-worn cameras in all facilities in the state and in the city. We're actually pushing for body-worn cameras in city corrections as well. You know, they're proven to be a successful tool for transparency in the country when it comes to policing in the communities. So we think that the next step is to have them in facilities where individuals are detained either pretrial or serving sentences, because that's some place where there's an accountability gap that we need to really close the gap on.
Well, in order for them to be effective, who specifically should be wearing them in correctional settings, and when should they be turned on?
We think that they should be worn by all staff that interact with incarcerated individuals, so that all of those interactions, again, there's a transparency. Those interactions are archived. Those videos are archived, and we think it serves to protect everyone involved. We think it serves to protect the individuals, of course, that are incarcerated, which is our primary concern. But we also think that it would help with the staff in correctional settings, where there may at times be false accusations or something like that. And so we think it's a win for all folks involved. In terms of turning them on and off, that's something that has been, I believe, a challenge, because in the police departments, they're able to turn them on and turn them off. And so we would recommend that they're on at all times, and we would recommend that at all times when interacting with incarcerated people, and that those interactions, those recordings, should be archived.
We mentioned at the start of the interview how the state did run a pilot program at 7 facilities in the fall of 2019 with body cameras. Do you have any information about how that pilot program went? Is there any indication that it maybe promoted better relations between guards and incarcerated New Yorkers, or had any other effects on the behavior by guards or incarcerated New Yorkers?
It's not one that we have a lot of information on, but I think that, one, to have it in 7 facilities and not throughout the state is not enough, and the limited time of it is something that, you know, needs to be done away with. Like, we need to have it permanent, we need to have it all the time. So whether or not it was successful, I think is something that isn't as relevant as the fact that there are cases of abuse that the people we serve report to us. And we think that this is something that will help to prevent that, that will help to minimize that, and it would help to hold folks accountable where necessary.
One of the logistical questions that comes up with body cameras in general is, how long is the footage kept around for? Because it can take up a lot of space on hard drives, and that can be very expensive to maintain on either physical hard drives or cloud-based storage. So how long would you want to see this data kept around for, and who should have access to it?
So I think that's an ongoing discussion, because sometimes litigation takes a very long time. So we should at least consider the time that it takes for litigation to be brought about and be heard, and for there to be some outcome in the litigation as a starter for what length of time we should hold on to recordings for. Because if we said we wanted to hold them only for a year or two, and litigation takes 3 or 4 years, and you now don't have the evidence necessary to you know, either adjudicate, process, or just come to make some determination on whether or not an interaction was inappropriate, then it would make no sense. So I think those are some things that we need to consider, what the length of time is that it takes to get, or the average length of time to get, you know, litigation and these kinds of things heard. And was there a second part to that question?
Yeah, the second part would be, who should have access, and in what situations should the footage be made available?
So the situations in which they should be made available, of course, are where there have been reports of abuse. I think that the attorneys representing individuals on both sides, where there are reports of inappropriate interactions, should have access. I think, you know, I also think they should be accessible via, you know, FOIL requests if there's some disagreement on what the footage contains. I know that there are security implications there, but absolutely the attorneys and the staff that are the court personnel and stakeholders that are looking to bring, you know, some action about should have access.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about the potential use of body-worn cameras in New York State's prisons and jails, and our guest is Rob DeLeon, the Senior Vice President at the Fortune Society. So it's my understanding that when you were younger, you spent about a decade in prison. Were there any instances during your time behind bars where you think cameras on corrections officers would have made a difference in your experience?
Absolutely. I mean, on the city and state levels, right? So on the city level, to this day, I still wear a scar on my forehead from an assault by two officers because I protested the way one spoke to me, and he didn't appreciate that protest, and so I was assaulted by two correction officers, you know, when I was 17 years old. I was a teenager in prison. And then on the state level, there are stories of individuals who were killed at the hands of officers. And there are also, of course, like I said, right, while I am an advocate for the men and women who are involved in our criminal justice system, I do believe that it's important to have this kind of recourse when false claims are brought against someone. And so I think that it would be helpful on all parts. But in my own experience, there absolutely are so many times that I can think of when it would have been helpful in terms of bringing about some kind of accountability. But I also think it's a preventive tool. I think that having body-worn cameras prevents the possibility, or it might minimize the instances of abuses, and it might also minimize the instances of false claims against correctional staff.
Does the use of body-worn cameras in a correctional setting where people are kind of just on top of each other to a certain degree. Does that present any privacy concerns for you? Are you worried about too much footage essentially being recorded and essentially invading the rights of a lot of incarcerated New Yorkers who are going to be captured on film just leading their day-to-day lives?
I think that if an individual is at risk of some form of abuse because of an imbalance in power or just because of the power dynamics, that for instance, in the case of body-worn cameras by the police departments, I think we need to do something about that. And so in the way that body-worn cameras have been successful in the police departments, I think they can be successful in corrections settings, and we have to be thoughtful about what those parameters are for having them on and not, but we have to be thoughtful of what the opportunities are, what the reports have been over the years for there to be some misconduct. So all of those things need to be taken into account. But the fact that we need transparency, we need to close the accountability gap, I think is paramount in all of this, and we need to be sure to act swiftly and to do what's right by the men and women who are spending time in our very incarcerative country.
So moving forward, what's the Fortune Society and other advocates who want to see body-worn cameras become the norm in correctional settings? What are you going to do to make this happen? Is this a legislative priority for 2022? Is it something that you're hoping to get into the budget? Is it something you'd like to see docs do administratively? What do you envision in terms of a process?
So it is one of our legislative priorities, and we've got a good amount of support from legislators in the state. Before I got on with you, I was on a call with Assemblymember Weprin, who is a supporter of the idea of body-worn cameras and other criminal justice priorities for us.
And he's chair of the Corrections Committee in the Assembly.
He's chair of the Corrections Committee. Of course, he is an absolute ally in this kind of work, and we believe a proponent of what's right. But in the state, we have a number of supporters, including Assemblymember Davila. And so, it's something that we're pushing as a legislative priority.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Rob DeLeon. He is the Senior Vice President at the Fortune Society, which promotes alternatives to incarceration and the successful reentry following incarceration. Rob, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Dave, thank you so much for having me. We appreciate it.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.